Welcome back to the Thermo Diet Podcast. I'm your co-host, Mr. Jayden Miller, and I'm here with my other co-host, Mr. Tyler Woodward.
How are we doing today, Jayden?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. So today we are doing a Thermo Diet Q&A. So these are questions submitted from the Thermo Diet Facebook group and some of our peers as well, and some questions that we thought of. So without further ado, let's dive in. Question numero uno, dental treatment slash prevention on the Thermo Diet due to high sugar slash high acidity of some foods.
So first thoughts would be to make sure that your minerals are balanced. Make sure that you're getting enough calcium, enough magnesium, enough vitamin K, especially K2, enough vitamin D.
I throw boron in there potentially too.
Yeah, definitely. That's going to be good for bone density, which basically anything that's good for your bones is going to be good for your teeth. That's kind of how I think of it.
Very similar. I think also that this is I haven't seen any evidence for or against this, but I think like the sugar in foods is just like very overrated. I think like
Terms of like the damage that it can do,
I think starches are going to be way, way worse. And I feel like, I mean, you kind of see that, like I've been eating sourdough a lot more recently and I feel like there's a lot of less sugary foods that sit in your teeth. And I think that's where the real damage occurs, when things get stuck between your teeth and it's just sitting there. And like, it's just like starches, grains, they tend to like sit there very easily.
We were also talking about this the other day. Make sure that you're not eating too much phosphorus in your diet. Make sure that your calcium to phosphorus ratio is much more in favor of the calcium. And if you're eating a lot of phosphorus, make sure to figure out what those foods are and think about cutting back on them a little bit, because that's going to lead to calcium being taken out from the bones. That's going to result in weaker teeth.
Do you calculate your calcium phosphorus ratio, or are you trying just eyeball a little bit?
Not really. I just, more than anything, I try to focus on getting enough calcium. I think that as long as you do that, your calories are going to fill in to where you're not going to really have enough room for a lot of phosphorus foods.
So just drink meat with milk is my go-to. And eggs with cheese. I mean, generally that's like pretty much what I do.
Lots of ice cream too.
Sourdough's pretty high in phosphorus too. I haven't really thought about that.
Yeah, I wonder if the fermentation process helps break it down.
Well, I mean, phosphorus is an element, so I don't think you would. But you do break down some of the phytic acid, so.
I wonder if it could be chelated somehow through that process.
Dude, it would be interesting. I mean, I've been thinking about this. I saw Jason Hommel, who's like the copper dude. He had someone that put, he wrote about in his book that they add copper into the sourdough to just get some extra copper. But I'm like, I wonder like what else do you do that with? Like, could I add some like actual calcium? And I wonder how like the bread would turn out.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the calcium, it's kind of like adding milk whenever you're baking. It's going to, sometimes I've noticed that it'll make it a little bit more dense and it won't fluff up as nicely.
It might be different when fermenting it too, but I don't know if you ferment. I don't know. I've never put milk in sourdough.
Yeah, I haven't either. I feel like if you let the milk sit in there, it might sour. Which wouldn't be.
Oh, I had some sour milk this morning. It was, I smelt it. I was making a smoothie and I smelt it. I was like, I don't think it's that bad. And I put it in a little glass and I was, it was bad.
Was it the raw milk?
No, it was, I got skim milk and I haven't been going to jiu-jitsu enough. I got some skim milk from the store just to make smoothies. So I could go with like eggs, because I don't feel like I didn't need a ton of fat more. I think I'm just going to stick to OJ in the morning. All right. So we covered that one. Anything else you want to add?
As far as tooth health?
Yeah. I think I like hydroxyapatite toothpaste. So hydroxyapatite is the remineralization mineral that you naturally produce to put calcium and other bones into your teeth. And then Jayden's talked about this a lot. Just washing your teeth, like rinsing your mouth out after a meal, I think is really good. Maybe some coconut oil pulling too.
Yeah, definitely. The coconut oil pulling will be good. I'm trying to think. I think it's called Miswak or something like that. It's like one of those sticks that you can like chew on that they used to use as natural like toothbrushes.
I just think of dogs when I see those. Yeah.
I don't have any experience with that, but everybody that I've heard that uses them really likes them. So that might be something to try just for like general oral health as well.
I think gums, like a good quality gum could be cool too, because it's anything like saliva is supposed to have natural antibacterial properties. So anything that stimulates saliva could be.
Oh yeah. That's actually something that is worth noting, is I heard Georgie talk about this a while back, is that you want to make sure that your teeth remain wet. You never want your teeth to get dry because they're meant to be wet. And so like if you're mouth breathing at night and your mouth dries out, that's going to be damaging to your teeth over time. So make sure that your mouth remains moist as often as possible. And if you're mouth breathing at night, make an effort to figure out how you can train yourself to breathe through your nose, which is going to have beneficial effects mm-hmm. in a, you know, a bunch of different areas. Yeah.
I saw something about that you need your teeth to be wet to remineralize them too, which is interesting.
Yeah.
For that reaction to happen.
Yeah, probably.
Question numero dos, dry versus infrared sauna, what's better?
I think what he's talking about is like a regular dry sauna versus an infrared dry mm-hmm. sauna versus like a steam sauna.
Is a steam room different than a steam sauna?
I think they're the same thing.
Okay.
Steam room, steam sauna.
Yeah. Well, I think they're kind of like two different categories.
Yeah. I would say that like the regular dry sauna is going to heat your body from the outside in versus infrared is said to heat your body from the inside out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because the rays tend to penetrate your skin and then they'll heat it up almost simultaneously. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And I think you can get a little bit, you can tolerate a little bit higher heat in the infrared sauna. I'm not entirely sure. That one might just be subjective.
Have you ever done one?
An infrared sauna? No, I've just done dry saunas.
Dude, I was thinking we could set one up in the closet in the back.
That would be dope.
That would be kind of cool. Yeah. Especially if it's like, because there's no like steam or anything. But I think, I mean, the benefits of the infrared are like, I mean, red light therapy. So, right, it's going to increase your mitochondrial respiration rate. Was it like cytochrome or complex 4 of the electron transport chain, like opens up pretty much and gets ramping up?
Yeah, I think it helps with cytochrome C2.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Structures, water. There's a ton of benefits of red light. I think it helps set your circadian rhythm.
At the end of the day, it's really just a healing spectrum of light that's mm-hmm. going to be beneficial for increasing cellular energy production.
And I think the benefits of sauna generally, and you might disagree with me on this, is kind of almost as a detoxification agent. Like just kind of, and I think one of the important things of if you're going to use sauna is to make sure you're getting enough minerals, sodium, potassium, calcium, magnesium after that stuff you sweat out. Because I do think it helps to kind of, a lot of us have buildups of heavy metals just from life. I was also reading, and I've talked about this before, that the heavy metals your body will use and actually accumulate the heavy metals if you're deficient in other nutrients to make up for it. Hmm. So like, let's say like lead is a +2 charge. Like if you're deficient in zinc, then that could be wrong in this exact example, but you will accumulate lead to keep those, the enzymes, the zinc enzymes running at a low rate. So you don't die.
Interesting. I wonder if that's because it replaces the magnetic charge.
Yeah,
of the element.
I think because you only see it in like the same, you know, vertical columns where they have the same valence, electron valence.
Okay.
So, interesting. But what he says, it's got a I forget what his count is, but it's pretty interesting stuff. But he said it like works at a very low rate. So it's not like a substitute for it, mm-hmm. but it allows you to keep firing. So the enzymes can still work. But is that what you think the main benefit of sauna is in general?
I think there's the detoxification process. I also think that there is a little bit of adaptive stress that you get from it, or stress that you can adapt from, that is going to be beneficial in the long term, not necessarily the short term. Mm. If you're into cardiovascular training for a specific sport or something like that, I would say it's beneficial. It's just kind of get your body used to being at a higher temperature and functioning at that higher temperature for a longer duration of time. But yeah, I mean, like you're also getting out estrogen, you're getting out heavy metals. I know Ben Greenfield, every once in a while, he likes to supplement with niacinamide whenever he uses a sauna because it creates that flushing effect.
Niacin, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So he'll supplement with that before he goes into the sauna because it'll kind of like push stuff out.
Pedro Dalmaral, like Thucydides, he loves the niacin. He says he prefers over niacinamide for the flushing effect.
He enjoys the flushing effect?
Yeah. He says like he makes it a juice. It's called the flush. And he's like, picture me like sitting front row in the class, like just like red out of his mind, just amped up. But yeah, what do you think? What do you think about the heat shock proteins?
I don't really know enough about them to make an assumption. I do think that they're overrated in a lot of cases. I think that the benefits that are discussed with them are a little bit, I would say, very contextual, and the people who are looking at them that claim their benefits are looking at only the heat shock proteins versus like the overall effect that's happening from the whole experience. So I think that's why they're a little bit overrated.
Yeah. I will say, I don't have much thoughts on the heat shock proteins, don't know that much about them, but I will say, I feel like that both the cold therapy and the heat therapy, like saunas, do like help prepare you for like the hot and the cold. But if you're doing those, like if you're going into winter and you do like ice baths, I feel like you're going to wake up every morning and it's going to feel less cold because you're kind of used to it. versus like 3 weeks ago, it was 90 degrees every day. And then you wake up, it's 45 and you're like, or even 50, you're like, it's freezing right now.
Right. Yeah. The key there is just having the right thyroid response from the stress that happens. Cause if your thyroid can't keep up with the cold, it's probably going to be more stress than your body can handle. So it's just something to keep in mind. But if you're young and you're healthy and your thyroid's in a good place, then, you know, it's worth trying.
Tips for concentration and memory for studying. And we'll add focus or work as well into this.
I do notice that I get a little bit extra benefit from supplementing with pregnenolone. I would say that my duration of focus is a little bit longer. Also, I would just pay attention to how you function best throughout your day and work with your ebbs and flows throughout the day. I notice that my best hours are usually from 8 a.m. till about 1 o'clock. So I'll make sure to get my deepest thinking stuff done within that time frame if I'm able to. And that's usually whenever I can get the most amount of work done as well.
I think timing, we do this a little bit, but timing your workouts too with it. Like some people like to work out in the morning. We do jiu-jitsu in the morning. Maybe you lift halfway through the day and then you come back. Maybe, I don't know, you wait till the end of the day because you're too tired. If you work out in the morning, something like that.
Depending on what your work schedule is too, you might try a biphasic sleep pattern. Because at that point you're basically getting like two mornings, and your mind is freshest whenever you wake up. So, you know, you could sleep for 4 to 6 hours in one period and then get like another 2 to 3 hours later in the day sometime and break your day up into two separate parts. And you kind of get that fresh morning kick and then you get like a second refresh period that allows you to do that. I know some people that really enjoy the biphasic sleep pattern.
Have you ever done that?
No, not myself. I won't sleep at night if I nap during the day. I'm just not tired and I'll just stare at the ceiling for hours and then only end up getting like 3 hours of sleep instead of the planned six or whatever that I was in bed for.
I also think a walking treadmill can be huge. Cause it just keeps your like blood flowing throughout the whole day. Also, Jayden does this a lot, moving around. So Jayden has we have standing desks at the office that we can go sitting or standing, and just Jayden will go to the couch, he'll stand, sit, just not being in one position locked in for 8 hours. I mean, I think there's a ton of health benefits around that in general, but that will help too.
Yeah, definitely. I will also change my whole environment throughout the day as well. So like in the mornings, I'll come to the office, I'll work. And then sometimes I'll notice that 1 o'clock feeling where my mind just kind of seems to hit a wall for some reason. Could be blood sugar too. So I'd make sure that whenever you are in a studying mode, make sure that your blood sugar remains stable throughout that entire time. But also I notice if I hit a wall like that and I still have a decent amount of work to do, I'll go home. I'll leave the office and I'll go home. And that change of environment kind of helps me get another 1 to 2 hours of good productivity time.
Yeah, I'm the opposite. Typically when I go home, unless I really have to do something, I'm just like done usually.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have to be deliberate about going home and being like, all right, this is what I'm going to do whenever I get there. Otherwise, I'll just check out because that's also my home's my checkout environment too. I don't like to use my brain too much unless I'm reading.
You want to talk a little bit about supplements?
So the pregnenolone, it's one that I recommend. Let's see. Danny has also noted that he sees some mental clarity benefits from supplementing with vitamin K when he does use vitamin K. Oh, really?
I heard him say recently that he gets really tired when he takes K and D at the same time. So always takes it at night together.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
But maybe, you know, different floats, different boats, whatever the saying is.
Yeah. L-theanine and caffeine. Good combo.
Yep. I like B vitamin complex, especially B1, B2, B3. You could throw maybe B5 and B6 in there too. Maybe even biotin, which is B8.
I think that's B7.
Biotin's, you might be right. It might be B7.
I think.
But B1, B2, and B3 are my favorite in terms of energy. Also like nicotine.
Yeah.
Which like a Zyn, I don't think is the worst thing every once in a while. Or if you can get the nicotine sticks, it's probably even more pure.
Yeah, the toothpicks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or the methylene blue with nicotine is also a really good combination. I don't remember the company that Mac Blackburn really likes, but
Troscriptions. Yeah. Those things are fucking expensive though.
Yeah, they are really expensive. Yeah. Methylene blue is also another one that I would recommend though too. It's going to help with the electron transport chain within the mitochondria, kind of helps increase energy production overall. I have noticed slight benefits from a cognitive perspective whenever I supplement with methylene blue. And Georgie's Oxidol, he has methylene blue with caffeine. It's not really that much caffeine that you use in it, but supplementing with that and then, you know, sometime later throughout the day using a little bit of nicotine, it's very synergistic.
Caffeine and nicotine definitely are synergistic too. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a reason for that because nicotine is similar to B3.
But whenever it does come to the nicotine, if you have an addictive personality, I would probably avoid it generally because, I mean, you don't want to go overboard with it. Using it intermittently can be beneficial, but if you get addicted to it, it's not going to be, it's going to lose its beneficial effect over time.
I also saw something interesting that sourdough, because of the bacteria that ferment in the yeast, has an interesting, I think it's a fat soluble form of B1. So it might not be like, I forget what form it is. I don't want to misquote myself or misquote it, but so it was like a fat soluble form, I believe. So it was very bioactive. So that I think is another reason to consume some sourdough. Mm. It may have been B2, but it was one of them. It was pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. And then I think the most important thing you can do, I'm trying to think of any other supplements, but balancing your blood sugar.
And then back to the nicotine, as far as like the addictive part that I was talking about, just for some clarification on it is like, there actually are some studies that show that people who are like smoke tobacco on a frequent basis because they're addicted to it, they do tend to have lower aromatase and they tend to have a little bit lower estrogen, generally speaking. But you're going to use the mind, you're going to lose the mind stimulating effects over time. So those are going to slowly dissipate. And then you're just going to have a reliance on a substance that isn't really serving you for any reason.
And we're talking about like pure nicotine too, which is like, I mean, as pure as you can get. So the toothpicks and Zyn, I think is okay. Maybe I could be wrong on that. Probably is not the best, but not like you don't want to smoke cigarettes generally. I mean, I think cigarettes probably, we think they're worse than they are. I think like according to Georgie, which they're not good, but they have a ton of stuff that's in them besides the nicotine that makes them really bad. Mm-hmm. There's just no benefits to.
Yeah. If you can get some really good organic, like pipe tobacco and then get a charcoal filter for your pipe, that'll usually, filter out a lot of the carcinogenic properties of the tobacco. And then just leave you with the nicotine that is pretty beneficial. So,
and it's antibacterial
and antiparasitic. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, a cigar every once in a while is another good option. Usually save that for long conversations or something.
How to improve thyroid production during winter months.
Ooh, this is a good one. Well, red light is definitely something that I use, especially with shorter days, more dark periods. Red light is something that I would highly recommend. Hot baths or the saunas. I think that's another reason that the saunas are beneficial is because, the increase in body temperature allows for the chemical reactions in the body to happen faster.
Okay.
And so I think that there is Ray mentioned that there's a pro-thyroid effect from that increase in body temperature that happens. So that's something else to consider as well.
Mm-hmm. I think Ray would also say vitamin D supplementation.
From a lack of sunlight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Depending on, especially if you're low, I mean, it's definitely something to get tested for before just, you know, going about it willy nilly, if you can do that. I think generally the same tips apply though. I mean,
yeah, really. I mean, other than just, I mean, the same principles apply, avoid stress, and then do as many pro health things as you can.
I also think we didn't talk about it in the last one as much, but drinking sugar throughout the day, like a lemonade or a adrenal cocktail or a orange juice, some kind of, you know, that's hydrating you, giving you minerals. And the sugars, I mean, what thyroid does, its pivotal function generally is it controls the rate of substrate oxidation or oxygen consumption, is the way to think about it. So how fast you're burning fuel. I think it's primarily linked to glucose oxidation, but it does in some sense control protein and fat as well. I think mostly glucose, but so if you want your thyroid to be running, you need the B vitamins to oxidize glucose or burn, and then you need the glucose.
Yeah, other than that, I mean, same basic principles apply. Just do the same thing that you have been. And except, you know, getting sunlight's going to be more difficult. So the red light's going to be beneficial. And then walking outside is probably going to be a lot more difficult, especially during the winter time. So if you can walk on a treadmill or something like that basic movement is going to be beneficial.
And getting a good quality source of light inside too. A lot of the overhead lights we use today, and I mean, it's definitely not the top of the list, I don't think, but they are, have this flicker to them. And I think that can really mess up with your circadian rhythm, especially when you're not getting any sunlight outside of like you wake up, it's dark. You go to the office, as you leave, it's dark. So getting some good light source in the winter is definitely good. Best tip for grounding
in the winter time or just in general?
This is just in general.
Get away from society and get as far away from society as you can. And get away from the EMF, get away from electricity fields of any kind, really. And then just get into contact with some kind of body of water or the ground.
I had an RDV where I mentioned this a bit this week that I think one of the reasons why you're seeing some people, so many people going to these destination vacations where it's out in the middle of nowhere, you don't, no cell service, nothing. It's because they feel phenomenal after because they're not getting EMF. And I think like, I mean, we live in Denver. It's like a lot of cities or parks around here. And, you know, you can make an argument for going out barefoot, spending some time out there. But there's also an argument to be made that, you know, it's so saturated with electricity and Wi-Fi and cellular service that you're not really getting much of a grounding effect from it. I think it's a little bit different when you're in like an ocean or a big body of water that has minerals in it, because then you're not only grounding, but you're also absorbing those minerals. But, you can also look at grounding mats, grounding sheets, which you like literally use into a ground. I think those are cool.
Yeah, the ones that you sleep on are pretty cool. Yeah, just basically connect them to the ground in your house. Yeah, I don't have any experience with those though.
I would like to try one.
Yeah, I think they would be cool to try, but I don't know. It still depends because like, I don't know how effective that's going to be with EMF coursing through the electricity,
the ground
too.
I don't know, it's things we just don't really know yet.
I am very uneducated whenever it comes to electricity fields and EMF and stuff like that. I need to educate myself more, but I mean, I know some of the things that it does, so it's worth avoiding and trying your best to.
I mean, the main issue in my opinion is that it opens the calcium channels, which so you generally like during an action potential, which is like your neurons sending, communicating to each other, muscle contracting, you have a rush of calcium into the cell and that triggers the action potential, which is like the activation cell, the contract, blah, blah, blah. The issue is that the EMF is, it's not like, you know, the muscle contraction. It's like this constant calcium being turned on. And so I think it just probably displaces magnesium because the more calcium you have in the cell, less magnesium you have in the cell generally. And I just think, I can't tell you like, oh, it causes cancer or anything like this, but I do think having these calcium pores that are constantly opened could definitely be an issue.
Yeah, especially from a nervous system perspective too. That's going to keep you in like very fight or flight.
Yeah. And that's another reason why these people are going camping and they feel like at zen and so at rest and all that stuff. Yeah, we just don't really know how good we could feel if we were in like a perfect environment 200-300 years ago. But how much collagen is too much collagen?
Typically, I recommend not going over a third of your protein intake. If you're under the age of like 25 to 30, somewhere around there. And then, you know, over that, if you're not really resistance training or trying to build muscle, you can fill most of your protein needs with collagen. Especially whenever you're not trying to grow new tissue, you're just trying to sustain the tissue that you have. Collagen is very beneficial for that anti-catabolic effect. If you're trying to build muscle tissue, then you should only probably get about a third of your protein, maybe a little bit less from collagen.
Yeah, it depends on how much protein you're getting in for sure too.
Yeah, that's true.
I would probably not, if you're trying to gain muscle as your one of your main goals, I would probably not include collagen into your total protein intake. I could be wrong on that. And I do think it's beneficial. But like I would say you want to hit your baseline for protein, like 0.82 grams per pound or something. Yeah, I believe is like the recommended dose. And then I definitely think collagen is good to get in there, but I wouldn't necessarily like count it towards it.
Yeah, I feel like whenever it comes to that, it might be more of like when you take it versus like, I think personally, I would still count it in my total protein intake just because like those amino acids are still getting in. Mm-hmm. You're just not getting, what is it? Tryptophan and,
almost all of the nine essential amino acids. I mean, you have some of them, but just it's really predominantly, it's like 30%. I'm not going to even give percentages because I don't know it off the top of my head, but it's mostly glycine, hydroxyproline, proline, a little bit of citrulline, and there's one more versus like, you know, meat is like mostly methionine, tryptophan, like phenylalanine, I think is the other one. Versus, so you're getting a very concentrated dose of the essential amino acids in the meat and all that stuff versus you're getting a very concentrated dose of the non-essential amino acids, which I think is the benefit of collagen. I just can't tell you that it's going, I do think it helps with muscle growth. And they did one study where they leucine is one of the main ones. They match leucine intake. I've probably talked to you about this, but so like I give Jaden 100 grams of meat. I'm just making these numbers, meat protein versus 100 grams collagen. Obviously this is way too much. As long as I give you the same amount of leucine, they found in the one study that you have the same amount of muscle growth. But they weren't able to replicate it. So I wouldn't necessarily rely on it. And you're also going to get, like no leucine collagen protein. And most people aren't going to, you know, just add leucine into there.
And like, I think the benefit there is like the animal protein, having the methionine and the tryptophan and stuff in it is going to increase the inflammatory response, which is necessary for, to trigger the healing effects from the stress that you just put yourself through versus collagen is going to kind of blunt that stress response and keep it from happening. So, or bypass it. So you're not going to get as much of a beneficial effect unless you get that leucine in there.
0.82 is probably a relatively high protein intake. You can count the glycine, the collagen, but if you're going like low, like 0.6 or lower, maybe don't count the collagen.
Yeah. I would say that like, probably don't get your collagen intake around your workouts. That way you can get a full spectrum of amino acids before and after your workout. And then, less than 1/3 would be my recommendation.
According to Kasim though, glycine increases growth hormone, and there's a couple of studies in that. So he actually recommends it post-workout.
Which interesting.
Yeah.
I don't think that it does it to
growth hormone
significant response. Yeah. I don't think it does it to a significant degree though. Does it?
Glycine?
Yeah.
I think it would probably be contextual. I couldn't give you an answer there. I'm not sure.
Interesting. I know a lot of people, that could be one of the reasons that it's beneficial prior to sleep too. Because it helps activate the parasympathetic nervous system, but then it could also increase the GH response during your sleep cycle.
Growth hormone confuses me. Why should gums such as guar gum and other thickening agents be avoided? Is xanthan gum an exception? Yeah. I mean, generally all intestinal irritants, I mean, like they say, you know, don't swallow gum. And I think, I mean, imagine that gum is just kind of like a big bolus that's just going to go through your digestive tract and probably it's not going to dissolve, which is like generally, you know, you can think about it in a way as like a sort of type of fiber. And so you have soluble fiber, which will dissolve when it gets to the bacteria. You have insoluble fiber, which can be fermented, but generally, unless it's sitting there for a really long time, won't be fermented, especially has some antibacterial properties like the carrot salad or whatnot. Gums are just going to be like really soluble fiber. It's just kind of mess with your digestion. And they're all intestinal irritants. I couldn't give you an exact mechanism, but I just think they're generally things to be avoided. If you eat them and you feel nothing and you're in like in a healthy state, you're in the Jake Miner thermo warrior state, I mean, then it's probably not going to be a big deal, but definitely not something I would recommend.
Yeah. I would definitely avoid them if you can.
Yeah.
And if you do get them in, like do it in very small amounts, like chewing gum or something like that.
The big one is carrageenan.
Yeah, carrageenan is definitely one. I would say xanthan, I would still try and avoid them if you can. It's been a very long time since I've looked at the mechanisms for why they're bad. So I'm not going to try and explain them because I'll just butcher the mechanism. But yeah, just generally it's anti-thyroid. It's just going to be not beneficial for your gut health or your thyroid health.
We'll have to look into this a little bit more and get back to you. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's one of those things where there's no benefits of consuming them. Mm-hmm. Like it's not like there's, you know, maybe it improves your gut health and like your microbiome. It's just like, this is just detrimental. There's no positive. Mm-hmm. Last question. Thoughts on grains like rice, sourdough, corn, etc.
I like white rice. Whenever it comes to sourdough, I like the fermentation process that mm-hmm. breaks down a lot of the gluten, the phytic acid, stuff like that. Corn, if it goes through the alkalization process.
Nixtamalization with the lime.
Yeah, it breaks down a lot of the anti-nutrients that are in there and a lot of the possible irritants that can be found. Or like the, I want to say there's like a molecule that's similar to gluten inside of corn. It's like a storage molecule in there. I think that gets broken down during that process as well. So something like masa goes through that process, and it actually frees up a lot more B vitamins in the corn and stuff like that. So very contextual. I would say that, like, with given a very specific process, you can make most things probably beneficial.
It's interesting to think about, because like grains, generally you want to pre-digest food as humans. So like when you're looking at meat, that's cooking it. When you're looking at fruit, you don't really have to do anything with that. Maybe take off the peel. Mm-hmm. And then with things like grains and fruit would be ripening it, allowing it to ripen, not eating the resistant starch.
And also if you're in a really bad state, cooking it is definitely going to be beneficial. It's going to break down what starch is going to be left in those.
Mm-hmm. I think that would depend on the fruit though. Like, you would never cook an orange, would you?
No. But like in that case, you would want to avoid like the high fiber content. So you would just juice the orange.
Mm-hmm. And so the sourdough fermentation, and there's also, I think the issue with brown rice is that you need to sprout it. And there might also be some other issues like heavy metals in the brown rice too. But no one wants to eat sprouted rice because it's, you know, weird. But like, we knew for like thousands of years that you couldn't, like, if you eat too much corn without nixtamalizing it, let it sit in the acid, the lime residue, you will get pellagra, which is a B3 deficiency. But you put it in the lime, it opens up, makes it more digestible. Same thing with sourdough. Like, I'm trying to get my hands on potentially on some sprouted white flour and then ferment that into sourdough. I think that'd be really interesting because it's like just as much little, it should be as digestible as humanly possible because you're sprouting it, which will break down some of the gluten, phytic acid, and all that stuff. Maybe make it more nutritious. Don't know about that one. Then you're fermenting it. So yeah, definitely cook your grains right. Anything else you want to add? And if you don't digest them, then maybe avoid them or maybe slowly phase them in.
Yeah, it depends. Some people have a huge inflammatory response from even sourdough because of the possible remnants of gluten that could still be in there. It's worth experimenting with. Also, supplementing with some enzymes too can help break them down in the digestive system.
I also think like you should try to eat as many foods as possible in that regard. That like when you avoid things, I think it's going to be harder to digest in the future. And I saw someone talking about the antibodies that like you will make antibodies for foods that you're not eating or something like that. I don't know how true that is, but it kind of made sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, Ray talks about slowly implementing more and more milk if you can. So like, if you can only have 2 ounces without getting an effect, drink that 2 ounces until you can work it up to 4 ounces.
He has that famous quote. It's like, instead of pouring some milk into your coffee, pour some coffee into your milk or something.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I think if we just eliminate everything, we won't be able to eat anything eventually. And you'll just like, if you completely cut out gluten and then you try and phase back in sourdough versus just going from eating bread, regular white bread to sourdough, you'll probably have a way less difficult time digesting it than you will from cutting out gluten completely, going grain free, and then trying to eat sourdough.
Cutting it out completely could be beneficial for some people given their current circumstances and where they're at. And then slowly implementing some easier to digest versions of it, like sourdough.
All right, so I got one last question for you. How do I write the beard? It's November, was it the 3rd today?
What so about
three,
it?
3 days into November, how do I get my beard grown out? What are your Jaden Miller beard growth tips?
Let's see.
I think I'm going to use the trimmer. I heard that's like you'd like trim gradually up so it comes out even. I don't know if you ever do that.
Really, it's just being awesome.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that.
That's all there is to it. You just got to be cool.
So I guess I'll never grow a beard. Do you put beard oil in or anything?
I put beard balm in there, or like, I'll mix in some coconut or cocoa butter.
Is that like a beard gel?
Cocoa butter?
No, like beard balm.
The one that I have is coconut oil based. And then I think it has one or two essential oils in it, but I don't remember which ones it has in there.
Gotcha. All right. Well, that's all we got for this episode. You got anything else to add?
No, if you're trying to grow a beard, I'm sorry. My tips can't help you that much.
Just be awesome. well, that's it. Thanks for tuning in, guys. And we'll see you next time.
Peace.